Alright, there's gotta be something on.
They say the word shit like 100 times.
You make the bully drink piss.
Whoa!
What is this exactly about?
Sean's parents are basically on the verge of a divorce.
We'll come back to bite them in the ass later.
I always wonder, like, why was it always that kid's problem?
Did you see that?
But I'm sure if I'm quite drunk enough to see Meet the Beatles.
Of course you didn't. Nobody saw it. You know why? Because no one saw this movie.
It's like Avenue Q, only worse.
Yeah, it was definitely a rental for me.
On 3D, plus the IMAX 3D, plus the other theater had it.
Which was not really that hard.
Wait, where did he come from?
Internet. One of those covers of the video store, you remember?
Oh, this is that movie? Yep, of course. Yep. What in the hell is this and why is it on my TV? Yeah, I'm gonna have to catch this from the beginning.
What am I watching?
Clone, why are you wearing that bra on your head?
It's ceremonial. And welcome to What Am I Watching, the Hollow Knight Network's movie podcast. Originally a bad movie podcast that just turned good, or good movie podcast that every once in a while goes bad. I don't know. It's one of those, maybe, or maybe it's a little bit of both. But
it's definitely both.
Yeah, I am Dave the Clone, and joining me tonight, as always, is Gomez, not Adams.
Hello!
And we are hitting this one up dynamic duo style, and I almost want to call it like end of summer, beginning of the school year flashback, because we haven't actually watched it recently. We're just kind of going off the dome on this one. A little Hughes Silver production from, what are we talking about, 1986?
85.
Fuck, I was off by 1 year, god damn it. All right, well, 1985's Weird Science.
Starring Anthony Michael Hall, Ewan Mitchell Smith, Kelly LeBrock.
Yeah.
Special appearances by Bill Paxton.
That's a special appearance, really? Oh, okay.
Well,
I guess according to IMDb's standards.
Robert Downey Jr., but here only credited as Robert Downey.
Yeah, because who cares that he had a father?
Exactly.
Let's make this weird right away.
Vernon Wells.
Playing?
Of all people makes an appearance.
Is that the grandfather?
No, that's the mutant biker.
Oh, I'm so stupid. Oh my god, that's, from also Mad Max and...
Road Warrior.
And, Commando. I don't need a gun, John! I don't need a gun! That's such a oh my god. Future episode right there. Commando. First Schwarzenegger movie I ever saw growing up.
He's actually titled this as Lord General.
Oh, nice. But he's supposed to be from Road Warrior, right? Like, I mean, that's...
Pretty much.
The closest thing he looks like.
And then you have Michael Berryman, where you might know him from the original The Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah, the weird-looking guy, right?
He plays the mutant biker.
Yeah. He's like, in a lot of stuff as
that guy.
The weird-looking mutant-type guy.
Because that's what he actually looks like.
He's the one who's like, I'd appreciate it if you keep this between us. I can't lose my teaching job.
Yes, exactly.
Which, this will all make sense at some point for all you newbies out there who this is like a brand new film to, who I'm sorry. This was like, this is early days of early childhood film aficionado-ness. This was, I remember, 85. I think I was in kindergarten, yeah. Watching this after school in kindergarten, man. Crazy town.
And for those just joining, who might not be keeping track at home, this is also Clone was the one that was watching Barbarella at 4, so this isn't really a giant leap for him.
Yeah, I'm real fucked up these days, too. It's like, when you think about this, it's like, yeah, maybe there was something to that whole argument about movies and TV corrupting people's minds, because I'm like, oh, shit. You know, this could actually explain...
If you're not careful, your child might end up like this.
Yeah, it might be like, you know... Fucked up in the head. I don't know. Well, you decide for yourself at home, America. I'm sure that's why you're tuning in. Part of the mystique of the Hollow Nine is like, hey, there's like a madman at the wheel. It's like literally a fucking lunatic. The shit he says, man, damn. We're tuning in just to hear what he's going to say next.
And occasionally Gomez grabs the wheel and tries to get it back on course.
Because, you know, there is a reason we did this. Like, there was something to focus the verbal diarrhea around for this episode.
There is, exactly.
It's just that revealing that I watched it in kindergarten might take this already off the rails. And some people out there are going, yo, yeah. Although, there were a whole lot of us watching this.
Yes, yes.
At my age,
I feel like this was like a night, like the Saturday afternoon matinee staple.
Yeah, well, I mean,
like the TV edit.
But yeah, I was gonna say this is after it made its rounds of popularity, like when it hit home video, when it was first in the theater. Because I mean, that's how I saw it. It was like a friend's big brother had rented it or something, but my mom also rented it. I think my mom was like a little bit more, like a little too hip for being a parent, and I think it was more the reason we watched a lot of these movies is because she was renting them to watch them.
There you go.
And it was just like, all right, I guess we're watching this too. I mean, Footloose, that was another big one. Mm-hmm. We used to watch a lot, and Flashdance. It's like all the young, hopeful entertainer movie story type characters, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, Weird Science made that cut, and one day we watched the movie about the two dudes who make a person. like very Frankensteinish make a person.
Given that's what they're watching at one point, and that's where he gets the idea, because we have these two hopeless losers.
Oh my god.
Because they're very much the Hollywood nerd type.
I didn't know that, though. When I watched this, I was so little, I was just like, oh my god, I guess one of these guys is going to be me, because I, you know, subconsciously was already identifying with the hero figures of the movie, and they are the heroes of the movie, but yeah, they are now.
Yes, this is their journey.
Yes, and they are the Hollywood nerd types, for sure.
And let's face it, we all probably want to be a little bit more like Wyatt and a little bit less like Gary.
Yeah, wait. The Gary's the blonde one? Anthony,
yes.
Michael Hall. We want to be less like Gary? I thought Gary was supposed to be the cooler of the two.
I don't know if he's the cooler of the two. He's definitely, how about he's the more, somewhat more assertive of the two?
Yeah. I mean, they both wind up kind of winning in the end, I guess, if you want to look at it that way. But I guess maybe just because Anthony Michael Hall emerges as clearly the driving factor behind the film for the most part. Like, even in this opening scene, when they get pantsed in front of the girls' gym class, and Wyatt is trying to explain, like, oh, you know, of course, you know, we would never do, of course, you know, we would never
Gary
do something.
Slaps
he just
hand
like,
over his mouth, like what's up?
And then walks away. It's like, it's much cooler if we look like we meant to do that. You know, like it's
like, there's no way this ends well, but there's ways it ends worse.
Yeah, and that's with us standing here like bumbling fucking morons. And that was our also in the opening sequence. We get to see Mr. Young Robert Downey, not so junior yet, I guess.
Yes.
Oh, there it is. Robert Downey, right in the credits there.
Playing the bad guy.
Right above Robert Ressler. Was he the other bad guy? Robert Ressler. Yeah. There's like
if you can count them as that. I mean, really, I think Chet is the main antagonist.
Mm hmm.
In this whole piece.
And it's tropey, though, like everything else. And I feel like, I don't know, was the 80s where tropes were born in film? Because, you know, it seems like everything was a little bit more forgiving of being experimental in the 70s. In the 80s, everything became kind of crank out. Here's the cookie
codified.
Cutter. Yeah.
And it's a John Hughes film, so he's very much talking about, like, this is what we think the teenagers act like.
And what
is it really what they act like? But nobody knows that.
Well, isn't it sort of also based, like a lot of his movies are supposed to be based on things that happened to him in high school? Not that I'm saying that they made a woman.
Right.
Not that I'm saying in somewhere in Illinois, and I like how there's like a big Chicago poster is the first actual visual after.
Let's frame the scene.
After we get through the opening credits there, which were just lightning bolts. I mean, really cool animation, actually, now that I think about it. But yes.
Oh, they put in the giant three. I'm going to think I'm a little bit ahead of you in the movie where they're putting in the giant floppy disk, the 5 1/4.
Oh, yeah, you are definitely a few minutes ahead of me. But, like, that whole thing. I mean, this is. I don't know. Do you feel like this automatically makes movies not hold up, the fact that there's some piece of old technology that comes into play? Because, I mean,
it definitely puts it as a period piece.
It makes everything become a period piece, yeah.
But then when you look at Lisa's hair, you know when this movie was made.
But she's still hot, right? It's not like she becomes unhot, you know what I mean?
She goes slightly less hot with the 80s hair.
I don't know, though. I tried to watch Hard to Kill recently, and I feel like she was way less hot in that than she is in this. You know, like,
well, that's because you have the shower scene to fall back on.
True, to your point. And I also think it's like, you know, your first introduction to some of these dream girl type characters. Like, of course, right as I'm about to say it, Kim Cattrall in Mannequin, you know,
okay.
And Kelly LeBrock in Weird Science, you know, they're the first.
I mean, Kim Cattrall for me is Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, true, true. But I think, did Mannequin come first?
Possibly.
Mannequin may have come first.
I was always
first.
Much more into Big Trouble than I was ever into Mannequin.
I don't know. I love Mannequin strictly because she's the lead. You know what I mean? And, like, she's very... It's another one of these that's, like, from this era where... Back then, I remember the jokes they were telling and the things they were saying. Like, you knew they were like, oh, they're talking about sex and shit. This is, like, you know, taboo. But now when you listen to it, you're like, wow, so innocent. So
Big Trouble did come out first. Came out in 86. Mannequin was 87.
Wow. But they were probably filmed reversed because she definitely looked younger in Mannequin.
Well, that's because she was all makeuped up for
Big Trouble. Yeah. Big Trouble is awesome.
It is. Anyway, moving on. Back to Weird Science.
Yeah, so I mean,
down the rabbit hole we go.
Yeah, it's all good though, because it comes back to like the underdog stories here all the time, and these guys getting pantsed in front of that girls' gym class. Like, I don't know. I just remember watching it, thinking like, wow, man, you know, like the way that guy was talking about, like he has the bullshit artist thing going for sure. Gary does, and so he's like talking about like what it would be like to be with all these women, and all of a sudden they get pantsed, and it's just like. This is probably the worst shit you would ever want to have happen to you ever in school. And then what would you do right after it? Well, let's go have a sleepover at your house because your parents are away, and there's no better way to get over trauma like this than to just accept it and move on like we always do in these movies.
Exactly.
But it's what drives them to eventually, just for shits and giggles, try to make, like, they're watching Frankenstein and Gary.
Gary has the bright idea that, you know, we can basically create a girl simulator, and we can put her in just these different situations. We can figure shit out.
Oh, they were going to use her to, like kind of, like, talk to her and learn from her, like, how to talk to girls. Like,
yes, exactly.
Holy shit. Like, you know, when you think about, I don't know, the level of sort of frustrated desperation that would drive you to do any of this. You know what I mean? Like, oh, my fucking God, man.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things, like, you looking back at this, like, you know, I might not have been the biggest winner in high school, but I was never this bad.
No. I mean, I would even consider just, like, chilling in my room and playing with action figures and, like, writing short stories, like, way closer to normal than, like, hey, let's use this computer and make a woman so we can sit here and pretend we have a fake girlfriend, you know?
And we don't have enough power to make her intelligent enough, so we're going to hack the Department of Defense.
Yeah, like, we can only make her a fifth grader unless we get more juice, which is also, I guess this is, too, where technology doesn't hold up and sort of dates these movies, is that, like, the answer can't just be we need more electricity. You know what I mean?
Well,
and I guess...
I don't think it was just electricity. I think it was, like...
It was processing power, yeah, because,
yeah, exactly.
Like, it's like, but they're, like, using a, what had to be 14.4, or, I don't know, what was before 14.4 BPS baud rate, dial-up?
No idea. But then we also have the magical electricity.
Yeah, magical, oh yeah, that's right, like, it's a perfect storm of all these things, like, hey, we hacked the government. And they have nice real 8-bit graphics telling us your access is denied. And then they just bowl that shit away. I mean, like, this is actually pretty ridiculous. I remember thinking this was really cool when I was little. You know, like, you know.
It's like, dude, you can hack the Department of Defense, but you can't get a girlfriend.
Right.
You're trying in the wrong places.
Or I'm just saying, like, why would the Department of Defense be hackable at all? Like when you think now what we've learned that the government's been up to all this time... Like, even back then, like, I imagine that the government had what we have now as computers back then, and it was just, like, 10 of them. You know, like, 10 Apple iMacs back then. And that was, like, running the DOD at that time, and they were just like, oh, I found the right IP address to go in there, and it looked like going through a tunnel in Contra, you know, and it's just like, and... I don't know. It's just funny that they were like, we don't understand how computers work, so now we'll just start scanning in pictures from Playboy, and that'll just be like, it'll automatically assign those dimensions to this artificial, like, person.
And if we scan a picture of Einstein, it'll make it as smart as Einstein. If we scan a picture of David Lee Roth,
yeah,
it'll be that awesome.
It instantly goes to his Dave TV intro from MTV back in the days, and I always remember, like, all my friends' older brothers and sisters who had actually seen that, and we were like me and my friend were like the two kindergartners watching this movie, like, all we know is that whatever's going on here is way cooler than what we understand, so we just have to be like, yeah, that's cool. You know what I mean? Like,
because everybody else thinks it's cool, so it must be cool.
It's like, we're on the outside looking in, and this is our one peer in, like, really behind the curtain. I mean, like, I remember when I finally realized that, like, oh my god, that, like, that's actually, like, that's a wireframe of, like, a naked chick. Like, they're making a woman. Like, it's sort of like, as a kid, I'm like, am I allowed to watch this? Like, what's going on
here? Is this okay?
And then they put the doll on the game board of life, and they hook up the little electrodes. See, like, they don't actually show us this either. This is another one of the magic of movie things. Like, they don't show us what the actual interface from the computer to the doll is. Just somehow they got these two cables coming off the thing. And they attach, like, the two lightning bolt cables from Frankenstein.
Yep. And magic happens.
Not to mention that the storm clouds are red. Like, the sky is red when this is going on. You know? And not only that, like,
Your computer summons the magic.
And everything in the house is going crazy. Like, the pressure cooker explodes.
Dogs on the ceiling.
The oven just blows itself up, the washing machine and dryer, like, freak out, and Gary's like, oh my god, what have
I
we done?
I must kill the computer, like, hit it with a baseball bat.
The only answer is to just destroy shit. He pulls the plugs, nothing happens. They scream, oh shit, so much in this movie that I thought for sure, oh yeah, like, it burned the Shermer, Illinois sign. I thought for sure that was just, like, a sign of being older and cool. It's like when you start dropping shit bombs all over the place, like, oh shit, man. And I mean, now it's just, you
know,
was like
a fact of life.
It just, like, it drops,
shit happens,
like breathing, it just happens on its own. But yeah, so they pull the cord and he's like, oh shit. And then Gary's like, that's it, we have one choice here, it's like swift and blinding violent brute force, I'm getting the baseball bat. Which then shatters as he tries to hit the computer with it. Nothing can stop the evil power of magic of life.
Exactly.
Yeah, man, I just remember thinking, wow, this was so cool. Like, maybe these movies were just made for that age range, when we would be that sort of, like, open-minded as kindergartners watching this thing.
When you don't question anything, it just happens in the movie, so it must be real.
Because then all of a sudden, you know, the door to the bathroom explodes open, and there's a glowing red light with, like, mist, and out comes Kelly LeBrock, dressed the way the doll, the little Barbie doll that they had was dressed.
The crop top and panties.
Yeah, like, literally, like, oh my god, camel toe, I think. I think there's camel toe here. No camel toe, but damn close. Like, before we even knew what camel toe was, that's how long young I was watching this, and now I'm just going, are they going to actually show this? Because it's like, seriously, I remember this being in this, like, small collection of movies going, like, I don't understand half these jokes. It must be about sex, and that must be me, like, why it's so cool. And, like, watching it now going, like, really? That's all they were saying? And I thought it was such a big deal? Like, you know, but, I mean,
at the time.
I mean, showering with this chick is, like, a big deal. Like, hey, we just made you. We're going to shower with you now.
And then, of course, the big reveal that, yes, by showering, we mean you're going to be naked, and we're going to be wearing our jeans and socks.
And I think, I mean, clearly she probably expected them to get naked, and they were just like, no, because we don't know how to do this. Like, we've actually never seen a naked woman in person before.
And so we're not really sure what the protocol is.
Yeah, so plus Hayes here, you know, neither one of us can decide which one of us you belong to. You kind of belong to both of us. It's like,
and that's awkward.
But she's definitely, like, once they let Pandora out of the box here, she's, like, the driving force from this point of moving on. Like,
absolutely.
Gary's the close second. He's, like, the lieutenant. I'm not Gary. Yeah, Gary. Wyatt is, like, third. Well, at least overtly, you know.
Wyatt's the one, though, that actually gets stuff done. I mean, he's the one that actually was using the computer. He's the one that was able to figure that part out. He's the one that hacks the Department of Defense, so he's not a complete slouch.
And she does hook up with him first, right? Doesn't she kiss him outside the first night that they all go out?
When they come back from the bar?
Yeah, which is the part where I'm at.
Gary falling down drunk?
Yeah, that's true. Maybe it would have been like a weird, awkward, like Eiffel Tower situation if they were both awake. But it's like, hey, you made it through night number one. You're the winner. But yeah, I'm at the part where they just walked out of the bedroom and their suits automatically changed. So that's the
which was definitely for the best.
And it's the kind of thing where, all right, so there's no ever definition of why, but she basically has genie powers.
Exactly. Basically what this movie was. I mean, she becomes this genie, and it's so what if it was done through the computer instead? But if a different kind of movie could have been through a magic ritual, same movie.
It's the idea that there's this ether realm somewhere outside of our ability to perceive in this existence where the potential for things like this happens, you know, or exist. And it's just waiting for
the right catalyst too.
And it's these guys. It always has to be some adventure on a quest, and it's their quest that drives them to find the thing that lets one of these. I mean, it is kind of almost like a spirit kind of demon, like just waiting for a host situation, if you think about it.
But this one is like, but in this case, Lisa ends up being the nicest of the group. It's the nicest genie you could possibly unleash.
If she's like a Loki with a conscience, you know, she wants to more. She actually wants to help advance like the progression of these two guys. It's not like she's just going to turn them overnight by magical powers into cool dudes. It's like, I want you guys to kind of learn this a little. I have a weekend to basically teach you guys how to fucking act like grown-ups a little bit.
Pretty much.
Or find some confidence.
Or really, it's going to take as long as it takes because I'm going to be around forever.
But the magic of movie making, it is a weekend.
It is, yes.
It's the weekend that that Wyatt's parents are away, that Chet comes home from military. Is it military school?
Yeah, he's like basically in a military academy.
Yeah, but it's like boot camp. Yes. It's kind of like...
And we get the sense early on that Chet is not somebody to mess with because Gary hates.
Yeah. I fucking hate your brother Chet. Like, why is Chet going to be here this weekend? I hate Chet. And it's Yeah.
And so then Lisa drives them to the candy bar.
Yeah. Well, first they walk out and like they're wearing these lame like whatever they could find sport coat and you know pants.
It looks like there was like the emblem from the high school was on it.
And one of them definitely was like a golf what do you call it, country club sort of you know crested sport coat, red fire engine red. And like they walk out of the room and like by virtue of magic electricity they become these like really badass dark suits like. I mean, badass by 80s standards, like the pattern the pattern on Gary's is pretty intense.
It'd be an eyesore. I mean, we're not talking like Lost Boys threw up on the coast of California bad, but still pretty bad.
It almost is, though. It is. It's almost like Corey Haim and Lost Boys bad. Like they grabbed a curtain and somehow fashioned a suit out of it.
he would definitely be considered a fashion victim in today's age.
Unless he was going to some kind of 80s costume party, and then it'd be like, wow, dude, where did you get that suit? Where did you get that suit? I might wear that for whatever I need to wear a suit for next. Be it a funeral, a wedding, a christening, whatever, I'm wearing that. Whatever, I don't even know how to describe it. The black and white checker pattern, you know, crisp.
It's weird.
Yeah, the costume designer should get some props for this. And they drove in a giant pink Cadillac.
In case you were wondering that it was an 80s movie,
yeah,
it tells you that it's an 80s movie.
But it's the fact that too they walk into this like very Motown themed, like mostly predominantly black, heavily implied criminal element bar. You know, like. Like, one of the guys at their table is a full-on pimp. You know what I mean?
And it's very much so.
The guy who was also in Roxanne and Forever Night. I forget what that guy
is. Oh, yes, yes, yes. I think he's just called Shady Guy in Bar.
Oh, really?
think that's what he's actually credited as.
And he has a very Greek name, I believe, in real life. I should probably be looking this up.
I'm looking it up right now.
Do you have the IMDb machine open? The Tribune, as they call it. Shout out to another awesome podcast. Well, anyway.
Yeah.
This is probably the first time they've gotten this kind of drunk before. Like, once they get over, like, you know, of course they walk in and they're like,
John Kapalos.
John Kapalos, yes. Hmm. What was he credited?
Credited as Dino.
Dino. Well, I think they do say his name at one point at the table here.
But they also have Chino Fats Williams as one of the bar patrons.
Yeah, he explain it to him.
The bartender's the Mitch Davis. I mean, yeah, okay.
I'll tell you what, you bend over, and I'll put this straight up your words. Like, holy, explain it to him. Like, oh my god, I guess it's like the end of the night, they're the last table in the bar. It almost feels like Anthony Michael Hall's Gary is telling the story about the girl from Niagara Falls that very he well was talking be. About in Breakfast Club. And it's just like, every damn night on the telephone, like, he's talking like a blues singing man, this girl, oh man, I was crazy in love with this girl, and I called her all the time, and the guy was like, every damn night on the telephone? What's this guy talking about on the telephone, man? Of course I'm talking about that. Well, explain it to him. You know, like, that, it was ingrained in my mind, like,
obviously,
since 1986 right there.
And of course, that was back in 86. We're calling from Illinois to Canada.
Holy
every
shit.
Night. How do you afford that?
On the telephone? What's this guy talking about on the telephone, man? Well, explain it. Like, oh my god. It's so. And then he falls over, and then it's just like, he is crazy drunk. He gets to keep Dino's hat, and he's in the backseat of the car, talking like a blues singer, like a sauced-up blues singer.
Yeah, he is definitely not. He's going to be feeling that in the morning.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. And, like, just the things that Anthony Michael Hall is doing business-wise, like, as an actor. I'm like, some choices he's making as being thrown around in the back seat here, legs up in the air and all. It's like, yeah, man, go for it. You guys set the stage. Everything's going to be judged against stuff like this going forward. It's absolutely. You guys, the rest of the Brat Pack movies, and Ferris Bueller. You guys own high school. Mr. Hughes. All right, so the hijinks continue. I mean, it's really like, I remember probably every guy friend I had, we always were like, oh man, wouldn't that be awesome? Like, wouldn't it be awesome if we could fucking do that? Like, make a chick, and then she takes us to a bar, and we get all cool, until you come home and fucking Chet is there.
Yes, well, that is the downside, isn't it? There's always a Chet.
Yeah, because
for every action, there is a consequence.
Even though the parents go away, Chet from military school is home.
Played by the great Bill Paxton.
Is this his first movie? I think this might be his first movie. It might be introducing Bill Paxton.
That would be really funny if it was.
Because, like, to think of how many more iconic, like, he's got a lot of iconic moments.
I feel like
this
can't be his first. No, it is so not. It is very much not his
first. Oh, thank God. Okay. I feel like I heard that somewhere, and I'm like, well, you know, that kind of makes sense. He did sort of knock
it. This is not his first. Terminator came out in 84.
Oh, all right. And what about Near Dark, too? Near Dark was probably before this as well.
No, Near Dark was 87.
Ah. 2 years.
So Near Dark was 2 years after.
But, yeah.
To give some context. This is a year before. He was also in Commando.
Yeah.
But it's a year before Aliens.
All right. Wow. Yeah. So Hudson's kind of like the older version of Chet, although
before Paxton got sent into space to fight aliens. He was at the military academy.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, it would actually kind of chronologically make sense how this. It's all one giant Hollywood universe. Dude, his teeth are fucking huge in this movie. I mean, is this before everybody started getting veneers out in Hollywood? Because I feel like I've never seen Bill Paxton's teeth like this before.
And you never want to see them like that again.
Mm. I guess when we cover Aliens down the road, we'll have to make a note. Did he still have the huge horse teeth that he had in this movie? It all added to the Chet-ness of Chet, though, because it's like, you know, like when you have, all right, we're totally wasted and, like, we just need to get to bed, and Chet is, like, interrogating us. Like, okay, great. They left you here, so what, you're in trouble now? And then he makes that whole thing, like, if he pukes, you die. Like, and then he's trying to make the guy puke, you know? It's like, fuck like, you.
Let's blow the cigar smoke in the face.
Yeah, walking around. Dude, that's the other thing, watching all these old movies, just how much smoking was constantly going on. Like,
yep.
Cigar smoking, cigarette smoking everywhere. In the bar, they were smoking cigars, you know? Like, oh my god. It used to always just be a big cloud of smoke, and now it's it's like not anymore.
And then you walk into the bar. The first, I remember like walking into certain bars right after, especially up in New York when they went out smoking. And you would walk into a bar that used to be just be a cloud of smoke. And you went, my God, this is what it looks like now.
This is what it looks like in here.
It's filthy.
Yeah. I miss the cloud of smoke. I actually
still had to walk through the cloud of smoke to get into the bar at that point.
Yeah, and then
inside the bar, it was at least smoke-free.
And then they had to start putting out little, like, smoking areas for everybody outside. Like, all right, let's make it warm here for you, because otherwise you'll stop coming to our establishment.
Which is actually a great... I remember also that was the big argument. Like, if we make it non-smoking, people will stop coming.
They'll just stop coming here, man.
You still have beer.
Yeah.
You still have booze.
I mean, listen.
And that's why people go to the bar.
We get strip searched to get on a friggin' plane, and we still go. You know what I mean? Because it's like, yeah, it's the only way to get to
You have to pay more for the booze on the plane.
Yeah, right? Holy shit.
Okay, so...
It just keeps going.
People are not going to stop going to bars just because you make it smoke-free.
They'll bitch about it, though. They'll yelp you. They'll yelp you.
Yeah, but if every bar is smoke free, go ahead.
Yeah, what are you gonna do? Stay home, bitch asses.
What are you gonna do? Just stay home and drink? Come on.
So yeah, she totally sleeps with Wyatt, right?
That is definitely the implication. I mean, he does wake up wearing
her panties. Yeah, I mean, she grabs his ass while they're making out, and she goes, "Are you sure you're only 14? Is that how old they are in this movie? They're freshmen." Holy shit. I think that's what she just said.
No, she did say that he fell asleep in the middle of her gymnastics routine.
Oh, true. Yeah.
Now, sadly, we don't get to see that gymnastics routine.
So we don't know if it was a euphemism.
Well, it might not have been, given that this is a very literal genie that we're dealing with.
And it's also the underwear thing. Why would she take off her underwear to do gymnastics? Why would he put her underwear on? All I know is the underwear is a big enough deal that Chet, like, loses. I mean, I guess the implication is Chet thinks he and Gary are gay together. Because it's just like, what the fuck? He loses his mind when he sees them the next day. Although they also wake up and they're like, did it actually happen? And the panties are the signifier that yes.
Something definitely happened last night. It might not be what you hoped had happened, but something happened.
Because all the damage, like all the craziness of the computer going nuts and the door exploding and like the smokiness of a Frankenstein monster woman being born is all gone. When they wake up, their room is like totally clean, like a genie would do, I guess.
It's like a Mary Poppins.
Yes, but with sexiness, like much more sexiness at the forefront of everything.
Oh, it was 85. What do you expect?
Everybody was horny in 85. It was a very horny year, 85. Every movie was about trying to get laid.
Or get laid. One of the two.
Or the aftermath of bad lay. Drama lay.
Anyhow. Yeah, they wake up. Everything is just the way they thought it was.
Yeah.
It's all just a dream.
And, I mean... I guess this is also why they contain this whole movie to a weekend, because then how would they deal with, like, going to school and, like, you know, like, in a couple days you could probably get away with, like, a strange chick hanging out at your house and not too many people finding out, like, Chet barely finding out that it happens. Like, he finds out on the last day, you know what I mean? It's like...
Yeah!
But if she were going to be around while they were in school, like, I guess they could have made a sequel where she comes back. And it's
well,
like,
they made a whole damn TV series about it.
Yeah, I see.
They got away with that.
I don't count it as canon. Is it canon? I don't even know. I don't know if it was, like, if it was signed off on by Mr. Hughes in some way.
I feel like it would almost have to have been.
Or, well, I mean, they must have paid a shit ton of money for the IP.
Yeah, but I think it ran for, like, what, 6 seasons?
Really? Did it go that long? I think I only watched a handful of one episode of that show.
It went for five.
That's fucking crazy. Well, Vanessa Angel is very hot, though. Vanessa Angel is gorgeous.
So, yeah, 94 to 98. So
wow. Yeah, I caught an episode, and I was just like, oh, but it's not the movie. Like, the movie's the movie.
Absolutely.
I just never, for some reason, some of these attempts at spinning it off never took hold, strictly because it's like, yeah, the movie's the movie. I don't like the non-movie version of the movie. Stop trying to make something that's not the movie feel like it's the movie, because the movie's the movie. This is not the movie. Though that woman is fucking hot. Vanessa Angel is awesome.
Very much so.
Also, then eventually becomes the best part of the movie, Kingpin.
Oh, good call.
And that's the only reason I recognized her when I saw the movie Kingpin. I'm like, oh, she was in that spin-off show of Weird Science that I only watched one episode of. So, yeah, after Chet. So, this is like, okay, we woke up. At first we thought it didn't happen, and then it did happen. So now how are we going to deal with the fact that we made a woman? Oh, we got to go to the mall. That's the only thing to do when you have...
best idea ever.
Because that's where... there were apparently a lot of deleted scenes that every once in a while, depending on what channel, if you caught this on TV, there was definitely some scene where all the people that she walks past in the mall, we find out, are like this motorcycle gang of Devo enthusiasts who all wear like the Devo red... with the light bulb hat, and like they eventually come to the party later too, and they're like, did we see you at the mall? And she's like, yes. And they're like, yeah! And they all come in, and I'm like, wow. They
Where
cut
did
out
that come
a
from?
Whole weird side thing. Like, we still, they're the people that when Kelly LeBrock walks by and Robert Downey Jr. and his friends see her and they start like following
okay,
her,
yes.
They like punch all of them in the chest or tap all of them as they're walking by, because it's like that whole line of people that all just like, whoa. And then, like, they walk by and, like, kind of, like, smack them all a little bit.
Right.
I don't even know how to describe it. It's about to happen in a second on my screen, so maybe something will occur to me. Kelly Brock holding up the, like, very transparent panties to the very old lady working in the lingerie section at the mall. Would you suggest these for a 14-year-old boy?
Maybe not.
She almost had a heart attack. That's hilarious. So, yeah. This is where we also get the Robert Downey Jr. and his friend dumping an icy.
The Slurpee scene.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal.
And then you have the people in the mall who have nothing better to do than to point and laugh.
And it's like they do that little like weird, like, we slap the back of our hands, then we slap our hands, and that's how we slap five, and then we do a little thing with our fingers.
These are two people who have way, way too much time on their hands.
And, like, also, though, ever since seeing this movie, you always are checking up, like, when you're in a mall where there's two levels. Always keeping your eyes to the sky for anybody walking around with icies up there. And now the girlfriends of these two, we find out, are also two girls who were in the gym class at the beginning when they got pantsed by these guys.
Yep. And they don't really have much tolerance for these kind of childish antics.
Like, they're clearly not amused, you know. Yeah. They're not happy. They don't do much to stop it, but they're not amused. And sadly, they take them back when they apologize for it moments later. But it's still one of those things, like, yeah, it's part of that trope of, like, the nice girls are just with the dickbag guys because those guys had balls enough to ask them out in the first place, because that's how the dickbag guys became the dickbag guys in school. They were the ones who had the balls who went and started talking to girls, and they were like, whoa, we're talking to girls, and these guys aren't. We're fucking better than you. And, like, you know, it was this whole, even, like, while they're, like, discussing, should we take them back? And you see, like, the framing of this was great. Like, the two of the girls in the foreground. They,
the
like,
guys being assholes in the background.
And, like, when they look at each other and they're discussing it, like, the girls can't see that out of their periphery vision somehow. And then after all this, after they finally smooth it over and the girlfriends are finally like, okay, we're not really mad at you, even though it was really shitty what you just did to those guys, dumping a fucking Slurpee on them. The guys see Kelly LeBrock going up the other way on the escalator, and they, like, dive over. Like, I'm like, how do the girls not break up with them right there? You know what I mean? Like, dude. Yeah.
They just haven't paid any attention whatsoever.
Like, the girls are actually already down the escalator by the time this happens, and they don't even see that the guys went right back up, you know? And as the two guys, it's like, all right, there's one of her. What are we? Are we? I guess it's back to Eiffel Towering, I guess. We're right back to... It was the 80s. We were going to fucking introduce threesomes to Hollywood. And they totally grabbed that chick's tits, too, by the way.
Like, yes. Well, actually, I like how the girl is even checking out Kelly LeBrock as she walks by.
Because they're all just like, whoa, hey! Hey.
The girls want her.
And they actually follow her out of the mall, and they're like, so, hi, hey, we're so-and-so. And I think the friend we actually see in Nightmare on Elm Street 2, if anybody wants to see the shitty, horrible second Nightmare on Elm Street movie. It's one that I suggest always skipping if you're watching that whole series, but if you're a completionist, I'm sorry. I know it sucks.
There's those people out there.
But it's like this and that movie, I think, are his two big... Only, maybe.
Robert Ressler. I think he's done a bunch of stuff small screen.
Ah, there you go.
He was on General Hospital for the longest time.
Yeah. He has, like, a TV look. Like, it's like, even though it's like I know I only saw him in these two movies, it still feels like I feel like I should know him for more.
He was on 24 for an episode.
Ah, there you go. But in season one?
Season day five.
Day five. I stopped after day one. I was like,
I'm just throwing it out there for where people might recognize him from. Evidently, he was on Murder, She Wrote for an episode.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's on Babylon 5. That's probably
there
right.
There you go.
And then he was on the Outsiders TV show.
And then they're like furious when they pull around, when it's like Gary and Wyatt pull around in the sports car to pick her up while they're like
you're losers.
They're like the guys that we just dumped an Icy on. And they're just like,
driving
oh,
a Porsche.
Hi, dudes. Yeah, with Gary's name in the license plate.
Absolutely.
And they're just like, she's with them? What the fuck? How did this happen? We must do something about this.
When did we step into Bizarro World?
This is not fair and not right, and we must do something about this.
Wait, did we have girlfriends? No, never mind.
Yeah, I know, right? And so this is also, I guess, at this point, she was like, she invited them to a party at Wyatt's house. Like, oh, by the way, we're having a little shindig, and like it's like the whole town comes to this thing. I mean, then
and I love the fact that she's waving her hand at the lights to turn them on.
Yeah, there's a lot of...
and I did, if I'm like, witchcraft is this?
And now we kind of have it. It's like we have all this stuff. I mean, it's right now it's on your phone in the form of an app, but I think they're working on the smart home that just responds to your gestures and voice.
Hey, actually, funny thing about the smart home and why they're not catching on, is because as soon as they come out with it, it's outdated.
Yeah, I hear you.
So why? I mean, people replace their phones every 6 months. Are you really going to go and buy a new home every 6 months?
No, but you have to somehow make the software updatable, and then we're into Terminator Genesis. So welcome to that.
And welcome to that nightmare hellscape.
I actually enjoyed it, but future episode, it seems now. Clearly, if one of us loved it, one of us hated it, we just need a third person to keep the peace, and we will talk.
We need somebody to say, not bad.
There we go. Continuing the trend. For everybody following, that's 2-0. The not bad team getting its ass kicked in the referential situation department. Well, we can't get to the party yet before we have the famous Lisa destroys Gary's parents' memory scene, or at least his dad's memory, makes his dad not even remember he's got a kid.
Yes, I have to feel sorry. I mean, poor Gary's dad with a bad comb over.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the representative of the previous generation that was just like, hey, get up, go to work, come home, eat food, go to sleep. That's what we're here to do. That's it. Happiness.
And I have to ask, how much hairspray went into Kelly LeBrock's hair?
This scene, probably, I guess, with the suspenders and everything, now that we're, like, analyzing, this is her David Lee Roth sequence right here.
It must be.
You know what I mean? I guess that's what this is. This is David Lee Roth is coming to the surface in this amalgam of all things, like, supermodel and rock star and Frankenstein's monster. She's also, I mean, like, her suspenders are in a giant white X across her chest. I'm sure that there's some kind of subliminal Illuminati message there that will figure
out just
down the
road. Drawing attention to what you're, where that cross meets.
Yeah, like, because it's like a
with
cant.
In the black crop top.
Yeah, with rhinestones on it that sort of simulate a suit of armor, I guess. Because she also has the fingerless gloves to match, and she's like, when she starts, like, throwing down, because the other thing too is, like, she's trying to say, like, you guys with this weird fucking 50s hangover shit, you're killing your son. The reason he's not popular is because you guys are repressing the shit out of him. You need to, like, back off. And they're just like, all right, get out of our house, we're calling the police. And now it's like, all right, I remember this about the 80s. Like, calling the police was, like, a giant threat for everything.
Oh, absolutely.
And like, you just assume, like, oh my god, don't call the police. And the funny thing is, back then, the police were, like, normal. Like, now, yeah, don't call the fucking police. I don't care, like, unless Godzilla is outside, and even then, don't call the police. The police are crazy, and they show up in tanks with machine guns.
And they're going to shoot you.
Yeah, they
Yeah,
they flash grenade babies in cribs, guys. It's like,
we don't. Yeah, unless the shit is seriously going down, don't call the police.
Right, but in this movie, they have a hot woman talking about fucking their son, and they're like, oh, call the police. And, like, every son on Earth is like, no. Well, I mean, every heterosexual son. Sorry, guys.
To be clear, though, I mean, given the kind of party that she's describing, I'm really not sure I'd be okay with my teenage son attending.
Well, I mean, especially, too, like, from the decor of their house and from the way they're dressed, like, this is, like, as rebellious could possibly be. Like, the only thing that could be even worse is if they come in dripping with the blood of having done a human sacrifice. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's bad enough that she pulls a gun on him.
And full-on pull the hammer back revolver, like, I will blow your goddamn face off.
Yeah, I don't see that. I don't see that playing for quite the same laughs today in the theaters.
Even though, like, you know, this is considered a classic of American cinema. This, we got to do this sequence as an iconic moment in movie history. The make my day, Al. Go ahead, Al.
Yeah, exactly. And then she pulls it on Gary in the car, and it turns out it's just a squirt gun.
Yeah. Like, Lisa, where'd you get a gun? Like, this is the first question you have after all the shits that's happened. Like, you're driving a Porsche. Where did that come from, man? Yeah, you notice we only ask when it's really serious. This is another moment trying to teach him to learn to grow up.
Yeah.
Maybe a little.
You would hope.
Yeah.
But still, it's like, this might not be the best lesson at the time.
Yeah. And then, like, the fact that she just makes the parents, like, forget. Like, Gary doesn't exist. Or, like, you know, the mom remembers and the dad doesn't. Ugh, it's too funny. And when that comes back later, that's pretty funny. Actually is a funny. And that's the weird thing about these movies. It's sort of like they had this feeling that they knew what they were doing, but they were really just being pioneers. You know what I mean?
And they had no idea what they were doing with this at
but,
all.
Like, you know, I mean, if it was written in 2 days, which is apparently the urban legend on this one, or is it not even an urban legend? This
I don't
is
think,
full
I think
on fact.
Fact.
2 days. Wow.
2 days.
That's talent, man.
That's cocaine for you.
Yeah, the 80s were a different time. The 80s were a very different time. I also you ever watched, there was an episode of Family Guy where they dramatized what it must have been like writing Good Will Hunting, and, like, Matt Damon's at the computer is like, all right, there it is, Good Will Hunting. And then Ben Affleck is, like, laying down on the couch, and he's like, hey, man, do we have any more pot? And he goes, dude, he's like, oh, no, he says, there it is, Good Will Hunting by Matt Damon. And he goes, hey, could we put, like, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck? And he goes, dude, all you did is sit there on the couch the whole time and smoke pot. He goes, but I give you the title, Good Will Hunting. And he goes, yeah, all right, I guess. Hey, do we have any more pot? You know, and it's like, I get to see, that's what you're going to do. You're going to sit in a room for 3 days and smoke pot, because it's two days on coke, 3 to 4 days on pot. That's the difference, I guess.
One's for writing, one's for editing.
And one's for not having heart attacks.
There you go.
So you might want to... I think there's a documentary about the National Lampoon's guys that was like... It was like something stoned, brilliant, and dead. And it was like... I forget what the first word is. But it's on one of the networks there right now. It's on a lot. Just go press your guide button on your cable, and I'm sure it's playing now. So email us, hollow9podcast@gmail.com. What was it?
Drunk, stoned, brilliant, dead.
There you go. Drunk, stoned, brilliant, dead. Well, now that you don't have to email us with that, email us anyway and just say hi. Hollow9podcast@gmail.com. The word hollow, the number 9, INE, podcast@gmail.com. Join the conversation. Tell us what you thought of weird science. Like, did you ever think maybe if there was a giant party at your house with a million people from town that you didn't really know, you'd probably spend at least the first quarter of it in the bathroom with your best friend, bitching about how you're not out at the party outside the door. Although, I guess...
Hiding from everybody.
It was implied, too, that the other guy either had to shit or was just, like, losing his mind, having horrible, horrible gas, but...
I think he was mostly just losing his mind.
And having horrible, horrible gas. Like,
yes.
That's gotta suck. Light a match.
Please. Of course, you got the bar chat. You got the guy from the, candy corner as the bartender.
Yeah. And he's like, you want it straight up? I'll tell you what, you bend over and I'll stick it straight up your ass. Yeah. That was funny. Like them trying to be hard and he's just like, nope.
I don't want to get my ass kicked by the bartender.
And it's like slowly but surely the cracks in the armor are showing with the two bullies. They're like, all right. And plus, from that, you know that Lisa's got to be, like, more, like, you know, them biting off more than they can chew. So, it's sort of like...
Just a touch.
I remember watching this never feeling like, oh my god, Lisa's going to go to them, and oh god, dude, I almost want to puke at the way that Robert Downey Jr. just did that, like, ridiculously over-exaggerated flirt smile at her. Like, dude, are you fucking kidding? What are you, some kind of GQ model over here? Like,
very, very simple. Downey, I'm sorry, you're not Tony Stark yet.
That was a chick smile he did. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm like, dude, you're doing chick stuff over here. What the? Oh, my God. So, yeah, I never bought these guys as formidable foes, except for the shit that they would do, like pouring the icy from the top level of the mall. You know, and it was just like...
Or they pantsed them at the beginning. I mean, it was all really, like, chicken shit kind of pranks.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't like, oh, my God, like, there's a threat that they might actually steal Lisa. But the other side of that is, what do they do once the guys start having eyes for the girls and not Lisa? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
There was no plan for, like, hey, what happens when she actually makes us cool and popular and we're suddenly like, we're going to get our own girls now?
Now we got to figure that shit out.
Even though the entire purpose of this party is for them to grow a pair and get the confidence to be able to meet girls on their own. And
But it also reminds me a little bit about in college, running joke between me and one of my friends was, hey, the girl said yes, now what?
Yeah.
Like, we're so used to getting shot down. Like, now what do we do?
You guys want to come into the bathroom with us and hang out? Like, I'm burning 5 matches at once. It'll be fine. Just
clear out in a little bit. We'll open the window.
Yeah, we could all just hang out here in the bathroom, yo. And then, like, I don't know. I guess they totally just ditch the dudes, right? Like, they get these two other chicks and throw them in there while they're, like, in the shower. It's sort of like, I never understood that part of it, because, like, at first it seems like they're going for the dudes, and then they, like, decide to bail again at the last minute. It's all because Gary and Wyatt decide to have a little conference in the shower stall instead of actually, you know...
Instead of actually talking to the girls.
Knowing what to do, knowing how this works. It's to the point where, like, eventually Lisa has to materialize crazy biker mutants in order to create the... I guess, is this a thing that's like is there a psychological level of being a teenager in high school or in America where you, like, I just need a life or death situation that I could save her in, and that'll be what shows off how awesome I am.
I think that was what John Hughes thought they needed. Okay. I mean, that's not real. No.
I don't know. I mean,
I don't buy the fact that, you know, they had to be like, you have to save your true loves. that you're going to date for a year and then forget about because it's high school.
Yeah, there's that. But I think at the time, I don't know, I remember being in like that hopeless romantic mind frame of like, man, if there was some way to like chivalrously prove my like knighthood that I would, you know, honor, die to honor her, die for her honor.
And how did that pipe dream work out for you?
Well, no fucking motorcycle mutants ever showed up for me to like show down with a revolver and be like, get out of my house, Mad Max, motherfucker. You know, like, that's the whole gag. John Hughes is, like, putting out there these, like, hey, impossible scenario. That'll never happen. But this is what all the, you know, developing high school dudes who are on the loser side of things kind of feel like they're waiting to happen, you know? Like, I just need that time where I can prove how badass I am and I save their lives. And now I don't have to worry about being cool because I know I'm cool, man. Like, I'm Ferris Bueller.
But the, yeah, I'm a psychopath.
There is that. But no, yeah.
I mean, but seriously, I mean, I think that one of the messages that gets lost in this movie is that you shouldn't need to have that life and death situation just to be able to talk to a girl.
Yeah, true.
And if these two were any more emotionally developed, they wouldn't need that life or death situation.
It's pretty funny though that it's like this. It's like a male response to the white knight syndrome or the knight in shining armor syndrome. That and I think this is probably more of like an 80s and 90s thing. But like for the idea that there are a lot of women out there who are just waiting for that knight in shining armor who's going to come in and rescue them from their lives. So, you know, to the point where sometimes they go to college and major in things that they don't even give a shit about actually trying to use.
It's the Mrs. degree.
The Mrs. degree, yeah, I guess. But I feel like there was an actual, either a book or something that talked about it's this knight in shining armor fantasy that so many women have. And I think the male response to that is like, all right, well, I'll be that knight in shining armor. Where's a fucking dragon for me to kill? Oh, dragons are make-believe. Gotcha. So it's funny how this is sort of like a guy interpretation of like, this is what we think will make us like stand out in our caveman-esque approach at life here.
Exactly. In this movie, it works.
Right.
And that's kind of the sad thing about this is that's kind of rewarded in this rather than actually, you know, here's the dragon in the room, guys.
Yeah.
Go up and talk to the girl. Actually have a conversation with her.
And when you try, you're just standing there shaking the change in your pockets.
Exactly. Because, hey, let's face it. Congratulations. You drove the bikers out of your house. That worked once. What are you going to do 6 months from now?
Yeah, but it was all that was needed to break the barrier down. Like, they started, you know, they at least introduced each other to themselves. They introduced themselves to each other, like the pairs. And that was, like, all the small talk that got in there, you know. And after the introductions were over, there was, like, nowhere for the convo to go. And even when they had their little conference in the shower, it was like, well, what do we do about Lisa if we go after them? You know what I mean? And it's like, let's cross that bridge when we get there.
and Lisa, of course, was like, no, I want you to go for the quote-unquote real girl.
Like, guys,
I don't want you to go for me, necessarily.
I'm the guardian angel that saw an opportunity to show up in reality because you two dumb fucks were trying to bring a doll to life.
Yeah,
like, I needed something that no one would believe. That way, if you told them, hey, I have a guardian angel, like, flying around making magic happen for me. She goes, plus it's like a vacation for me. I get a weekend on Earth, get to hang with the humans. We don't get this shit in the realm that I'm from. I never get to see the results of our work.
Precisely.
She's supposed to be that final, like, if I don't do this, I almost want to see the sequel.
I won't get my wings!
And you guys will never progress past the two dudes getting pantsed in the fucking doorway of the girls' gym class. You know what I mean? It's like, I want to see the Ghost of Christmas Future version of this where she never showed up and what they turned into, you know, like, because at one point when the tables really turn is when Robert Downey Jr. and Robert Russell come up to them and be like, what do you want for Lisa? Like, we'll give you Deb and Hilly for Lisa. Like, it's like, oh, shit, now we are the ones with all the cards at the table. We're the ones with all the chips on our side.
Of course, then they're, you know, so you're training your girlfriends for something that we can make for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not creepy at all.
And then there was, like, one point where he's like, it's about respect. And it's about honor, and you're just like, Jesus, dudes, these are just words. Like, these are just words you idiots are throwing around because you heard the grown-ups saying them. And their natural consolation to that is like, well, how about we make a Lisa for you?
Yeah, because that ends well.
And you could say as soon as the signs that this is happening start, the real Lisa gets real pissed.
And oh, yeah, because she knows what's going on. And then, of course, we have the summoning the red cloud again.
The red cloud of death magic. So, I mean, this is all evil happening. Don't press enter. The bras are on the heads. And then this, like, it's almost as if, like,
the parents start dancing in the picture.
Yeah, like the Matrix. Like a giant glitch happens in the Matrix, and now it's almost like 15 kinds of reality are all overlapping at the same time. Like one of the guys from the party winds up on the TV, no matter what channel they change it to.
And of course, it's the Munsters.
Yeah, first thing he shows up in. We got rooms turning upside down, and people like flying all over the place. We got people getting sucked out of the fireplace.
Yep.
We actually have some brief nudity coming up here where that chick gets all her clothes taken off.
And who was a Playboy Playmate for 1982.
That's why she got naked. Okay. It all makes
sense. That was not a coincidence.
And she's playing friggin' Heart and Soul on the piano. It's just like, come on. Like, we're legitimizing this a little bit.
But not much. And she's just like completely oblivious to whatever.
And I guess if you were at a party and that's all you knew how to play, you would play it. You know what I mean? Because
there was always that person who would just play whatever it was, that one song that they knew how to play.
And if it was a dude, it was like, oh, guys, that's it. All the chicks. He's getting first crack at all the chicks now. And here it's a chick who's just like, I'm just here because I'm a playmate and they need somebody to get naked in this movie. But yeah, like, she's in the room where everything is getting sucked out of the fireplace and up the chimney and thrown into the brook behind the house. The original Dawson's Creek.
Oh, and there goes the gazebo.
Yeah, oh damn, yeah, that piano really did some damage. And we don't see the bra come off, we just cut back to boobs. Like, okay, everything else came off.
Because it would be a little bit hard to explain how wind unhooked a bra.
Because it's like, it's not hard to explain how I pulled a piano out of the friggin' house. Hey, it's wind, the piano's a big blacky thing there, the bra, you know, that's hooked on. No reason that shit's gonna come off. We gotta do something. All right, you know, how about we'll just cut back after the bra's already off? Like, yeah, but I think we should still take the bra off, is what I'm saying, though, right? We're gonna do that, right?
We're paying for a playmate.
John, everybody here wants to see boobs, dude. Everybody here wants to, you know, we're working on Sunday here, John. We're working on Sunday. We're behind budget. We're, you know, everything's fucked up. We need this, John. We need this. We need to see some boobs.
they forgot to do one very important thing.
Oh, we forgot to pick up the doll! Up
the doll!
And this is where it's one of those, like, ha-ha, to teach you a lesson, we have to really have this be as fucked up as possible. Using the same program with the same diagrams of boobs and chicks, what does the computer bring to life? Oh, the nuclear missile off the cover of Time magazine.
Because that, you know.
And it was at, like, one of the electrodes was at the top of the missile. Yep. The other was at the bottom, and that took the place of the doll.
And through the magic of computers, we made a nuclear missile happen.
And it didn't come out of the bathroom like she did. It just comes up through the now existing nuclear missile silo beneath the house.
I try to make some sort of... Yeah, I'm not even going to go with what visual that is.
It's a launch tube that is now fucking the house.
Yeah. And of course, that's when Grandma and Grandpa decide to show up.
Yeah, well, that was... The little cutaway to them at the restaurant. Like, you know what we should do? We should drop by on Wyatt. What boy doesn't love a visit from his grandparents? Like, the one who's throwing a giant house party.
Right. The one who's throwing a proto-rave at his house.
The one who built a woman Frankenstein style and made supermodel Kelly LeBrock, who has magic powers. And, I mean, even them, though, like, what if this was their daughter throwing this party? Like, they just walk in and start, like, beating people? Like, what the fuck are you doing? What are you doing?
I think Grandpa was getting a little field there.
Yeah, that last one who had his hat on? It was like, hey, in front of your old bag here, you're, like, copping some booby.
Okay.
Dude, you old people, man. No fucking shame. Just do what you feel like. All right.
And then yelling at the genie.
And she's just like,
"Art idea.
Hold on, motherfuckers. I think there's some shit in the kitchen you're going to want to check out. Like the inside of this closet.
We're just going to put you in cryostasis. No worries.
They're not aging anymore." You're like, whoa.
Okay.
Oh, man. So, yeah, well, after the grandparents' missile, there's the blue room, there's so much has happened, and now I think it's time to fast forward to the crux, which would be motorcycle mutants.
Yes.
Right?
I like how everything in the kitchen is blue. Like, she's making blue muffins or something.
Yeah, like, whatever. It's almost like there was a blue explosion.
Yeah, the only thing that's not blue, the missile.
The missile, and, like, I think there's a bread box on the counter that somehow stayed white. But yeah, it's like after they were so pissed when she revealed that she made the grandparents catatonic that she was just like, Jesus, what is it going to take to get through these guys?
And the look on Gary's face.
That's some fucked up shit, Lisa. He's like, that's crazy, Lisa. I don't even know what he actually says there. I forget the real
life. It doesn't matter.
It's just on that. I was like, Lisa, this is a new low for even you. Like, we don't know how much more we can take. I don't know how much further you're going to go with this. How about motorcycle mutants? How about that? Oh, I'm sorry. I cut you off there.
No, no worries.
It happens. So, yeah, after the grandparents being catatonic wasn't enough, somehow that was supposed to drive Gary and Wyatt to go after the girls.
I'm not sure how, but...
It's more that, like Lisa's like, see, I took care of this, so you could still have your party and not worry about shit. And it's like, yeah, but that's my grandparents.
That's not okay.
And of course, though, once Robert Downey Jr. and Robert Ressler see motorcycle mutants, they're like, yeah, we gotta get the fuck out of here. And they're like, well, what about the girls? Girls, schmurls. You know, it's like, wow, dude, they really do suck. Like, these guys suck. They suck.
And they don't even, like, go out in a quick way. They, like, duck down and sneak out.
And is that the last we see of them? I think that's the last we see of them in the movie, right? Because after this, because then after this, it's like, okay, you know, they're motorcycling around. Gary and Wyatt hide in the closet. What's Vince's last name there? Is it Vince? It is Vince, right?
Yeah. I don't know if he has a lot.
Well, no, the guy from Mad Max.
Oh, Vernon Wells.
Vernon
Wells.
Something with a V. Vernon Wells. When he comes in is when it's like, all right.
Now
it's
on.
Get these assholes out of that closet. Let's drag them out here. Start really dropping the bombs. Like, all right, dude, here we go. This is almost as bad as being pantsed. Do you want all these people to know? You wear a bra on your head and that you can't even take a shower with a beautiful woman without wearing your jeans. And it's like, I think by the end of the sequence, when they finally, like, you know, they stand up to these guys and get them to leave, are you left with the impression that these people were just like, going about their normal Saturday night, and then when Lisa, like, snapped her fingers...
I think she kind of created them out of thin air.
It's almost like... But then, like, the guy says the line about the teaching job, and then he's like, hey, man, call me. We'll do lunch. You know, it's sort of like... Were they just, like, in the neighborhood on their Saturday night, and she flipped her... You know, she snapped her fingers, and it was like an MK Ultra moment. Like,
they could very well have been.
I must kill... The Queen. I must kill the Queen. It's like, we must ride motorcycles into this house.
And what do we do on a Saturday night? We participate in the Purge.
Yeah.
That's how we roll.
It's like the first iteration of the Purge. Oh my God. All the things that are predicted in old movies. This Illuminati predictive plurogamming, you motherfuckers. So fucked up. So terrible. So mean. So mean what you do to all of us. It's not cool. But, I mean, again, I think this is the idea of this, like, they not only look cool to the girls, they wind up looking cool to all these people because they kind of wind up saving everybody. And, like, there's definitely got to be something, some kind of psychological term for this idea of, like, hero moment that, like, you know, totally changes your social standing. You know what I mean? Like, after this, you're now in the crowd, the in crowd. Even the in crowd is going to bow down to you a little bit because you pulled a fucking gun on these guys, man, and stood right up to them. Like,
no one is ever going to be throwing a party like this anytime soon.
Ever again. You know, like, can we get you guys something to drink? You guys need anything? Like, first they're trying to do the host thing. And is this your party? Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know how you'd really say it's our party. It's a party. We're throwing it. But yeah, sure. It's our party. Like, first they're trying to talk their way out of it, trying to backpedal.
I love how everybody's ducking as Anthony Michael Hall, as Gary gestures wildly with the pistol.
Yeah. Like, once they leave, and he's like, do you know what we did? You and me, we just saved all these people. And they're like, oh, shit.
It's just a water gun. Oh, wait, maybe it's not.
Yeah, so that's, like, genie magic there. Like, it's a water gun when she needs it to be a water gun, but it's actually a real revolver. Like,
when she wants it to be.
Yeah, which is when everybody needs to know he was a man. He had balls. He wielded a loaded weapon. Yeah, he can wear a bra on his head. He could shower with his jeans on. This guy can shoot at fucking...
No one's gonna care.
Motorcycle mutants are scared of his ass. You can... what is it? You got two choices. You guys can, you know, can leave or you stay and die.
Yeah, pretty like, much.
Oh my god, dude.
It's like you're throwing down with Mad Max mutants. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, heads off! Like, oh shit, yeah. Once they get, that's what it was too. Like, once they go for the two girls, oh shit, are you two the you're the romance interests? Come here. This will spur on some ball
exactly.
growth.
Exactly. It's like, oh, we're hitting all the story elements. Come on, let's go.
Now they're damsels in distress. Yep. Yeah, so this is practically, because we're watching the movie while we're doing this, this is practically a syncable commentary.
Pretty much, yeah.
This is
very
like, kind
of
like...
Then, of course, at the very end, you've got the final showdown with the one that really matters against Chet.
Yeah, now, dude, let me tell you how many years of life went by before I really realized that she had just turned him into a giant pile of shit. Like, I did not know that that's what he was. I just thought he was some kind of giant, like, gremlin monster thing. And then finally, one of my ex-girlfriend from, like, I don't know, 10 years ago now? Holy shit, that was a long
You're
time
old.
Ago. Well, and she was older than me at the time. She was 12 years older than me at the time. And older enough that, like, she wasn't in kindergarten when this came out. She was more in the crowd that this movie was aimed at when this
there
came
you
out.
Go.
And she was like, oh my god, you didn't know that he's a pile of shit? And I'm like, well, now that you say it, it's so goddamn obvious, I can't even believe I didn't know this. But no, I did not know he was just turned into a giant pile of shit. Like, I thought it was some kind of weird monster that eats flies.
I think I thought the same thing. But, it's like, okay, so basically this is the shit demon from Jay and Silent, from Dogma.
Yeah, well, that's obviously...
the version for
that,
it.
That's where that came from. It's like, well, if John Hughes can do it, Kevin Smith can do it. The Golgotha
exactly.
shit demon. But yeah, Chet comes home morning after the party, after these guys get their hero moment, the girls, you know, spend the night.
Chet's been out hunting.
And he comes back with a turkey or whatever it is that he killed. And it's like he shows up, like there's sports cars, there's aftermath of a party, house is wrecked, there's a giant missile in the house.
The living room is missing.
It's snowing in his bedroom. And finally, this is where Chet finds out about Lisa. Like, he didn't know about Lisa until this moment.
Yep.
So he obviously, because she's Kelly LeBrock, wants to fuck her and has no problem telling her that he wants to fuck her. And she's like, guys, why don't you take the girls home? I'm going to have a word with Chet here. And all of us at home, again, I think it's like all the bad guys in this movie, you always knew, like, yep, there's really no defeating Lisa.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're going up against Lisa, I'm not worried about this at all.
Pretty much.
And when they come home from dropping the girls off, and this is where we get the callback, because, you know, Gary sets off a police chase driving his red he's got the Ferrari, right? Gary's got the Porsche, or no?
Yep, and here he gets away from the...
And I think this is actually the Ferrari that my stepdad used to have that he's driving in this movie. And, you know, when he's hot-rodding and they, like, turn a quick corner, they wind up cutting off a car, and the driver of that car yells, "You son of a bitch!"
That's your son!
Gary's dad. And Gary's mom is like, "That's our son! That was Gary!" And like, dad's like, "Who is this Gary fella?" And I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Sad times. I wonder how long till that wears off at the end of the movie.
I think once the reset button gets hit on this,
yeah,
and everything gets put back to normal, I think that John Hughes explicitly came out and said, no, everything got reset.
It's got, I mean, if Chet turned back from a piece of shit. You know,
yeah,
so
the grandparents get unfrozen.
Yeah, everybody's fine. The house gets put back together.
The kitchen's no longer blue. You know,
yeah,
everything.
But yeah, they get home from dropping the girls off, the cars disappear behind them, and Chet is a giant ball of shit, and he's apologizing to...
Profusely.
And I think before they got there, he's like, Lisa's giving him the rules, like, you have to stop extorting money from your brother, you have to stop torturing him, you have to stop doing this, and then he says something that pisses her off, and he goes, just for that I should give you a set of elephant balls. He's officially scared of Lisa, so it's safe to assume that even after the movie's over, he'll stop terrorizing his little brother.
Yep.
We'll see what happens, like, jury's out on that since they never made a sequel, but I think we can safe to assume that...
Well, I mean, at the end of the movie, they definitely show that Lisa hasn't gone anywhere. Not really. She's teaching gym class.
Yeah, like, for no reason, all of a sudden, she's the new gym teacher. And it's, like, for the guys, too, because, like, it's the guys' gym class that she shows up at.
Well, basically, I mean, look at it this way. She helped out Gary and Wyatt find their self-confidence. So now this is what her new thing is, to get all these guys now to build up their self-confidence.
But then won't that just be creating the same sea of mediocrity that had Gary and Wyatt being invisible in the first place?
It could very well. But I mean, but again, this is trying to get them, these other people, to build up their self-confidence as well. So to not necessarily be that sea of mediocrity. I mean, she's trying to act as a force of good.
Yeah, I guess. I hope so. I think so. I mean,
for various definitions of good, but...
Yeah, I mean, like, is it safe to assume that none of these guys are the types of people that would have picked on Gary and Wyatt before? Or yeah, now Gary and Wyatt have this new level of renown and fame and street cred that it doesn't really matter.
Maybe she's going to teach them how to be actually decent human beings.
Yeah. Unfortunately, she wound up to go on marrying Steven Seagal and having the worst life ever because apparently he, like... emotionally abused the living shit out of her. She's all weird. I read a whole story about how she felt like she was trapped in her marriage, and that's kind of why she disappeared from the public spotlight. And once she got away, now she's trying to like write books or some shit. I don't know. It's
okay.
Probably should have done that research before doing this podcast, kind of like watching the movie before doing this podcast. But I know if you Google Kelly LeBrock...
Seagal had an affair with a couple's children's nanny.
That could have done it as well.
He had a daughter with the nanny.
That could have done it as well. Oh, God. But she also did say, like, there is either an interview or an article or something that she wrote where she goes on the record saying that he was very, like, possessive and like wouldn't let her leave the house and didn't like was very like jealous that other guys were looking at her. I'm like, dude, she's a supermodel. That's how she got fat. That's why she was in that fucking movie with you. It's why she was in Hard to Kill, which is very hard for me to watch knowing that this is what eventually happens to her. But it was on the other day and I was like, damn, we should do that movie too.
And continuing the sad trend of evidently she was close friends with Gene Wilder.
Oh, no! I wonder if she on the list? Is she up on deck now? You are in proximity. 2016 sees you.
she was very good for... and actually, they were in the same movie, Woman in Red.
Oh, my God, such a good movie. We have to do... Have you not seen that movie?
I have not seen that movie.
That movie is like... Gilda Radner's in that movie as well.
Okay.
That movie is fucking awesome. Woman in Red? Ugh.
And Kelly LeBrock was the titular... Woman in Red.
Yes. So that's another Kelly LeBrock movie. All right. So it's Weird Science, Woman in Red, and Hard to Kill, and then it all just falls apart after that. Like, history becomes ugly in the late 80s and early 90s.
Very much so. But evidently she remarried in 2000, I think it said 7. Doesn't really have anything after that, so let's hope that she's doing well.
Yes, because she was one of the standard of hotness that I grew up, like, okay, you got Barbarella, you got Kelly LeBrock in Weird Science, there's a couple key ones that stand out. I was like, oh my god, super gorgeous, this is what Dave learned was hotness back
you,
in the
you
day.
You probably had Brigitte Nielsen.
Yes, Red Sonja was in there. Of course Red Sonja was in there. Oh shit, yeah, I'm sure we could keep naming the list. Probably as we keep going doing this podcast, but
it's
probably, like,
very much so.
I forget what movie that was. There was some movie that, like, I was listening to We Ate Movies, and they were making fun of the. It was an Adam Sandler movie where basically they're doing what we just did.
Gotcha.
They're like, oh my god, let's do the list of hot chicks. Like, is this the thing guys do? Like, we all go meet up and we're like, all right, dude, did you bring your list? Like, listen, I'm just saying, when we talk about movies on this podcast, we talk about, like, we're trying to put you in, we're framing it in the context of the time that we first saw it. And when I first saw it, I was an impressionable youth, and this is my first, like, exposure to, like, a fucking gorgeous chick. And the fact that everybody in the movie was falling all over her reinforced for me that this is, like, a standard of hotness.
And I'm going to throw out one other name, since we're talking about 80s movies, Sandel Bergman. Who played Valeria in Conan.
Oh, yes, the first Conan movie.
Yeah, and she and then she played she was actually the villain in Red Sonja. So
just turning her hair dark and she looks so different. We'll put a giant scar on her face too, I guess it kind
of. And it wasn't that giant of a scar. She acts like it is, but she's not.
They did this. So I killed your family. It's like, "Yo, you're a lunatic." You're
like,
fucking crazy.
A little bit of plastic surgery, you'd be fine. Anyway.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
But
oh
anyway, so I thought I needed to throw that out there.
And we've already mentioned Kim Cattrall multiple times.
Yes.
Kim Cattrall is, like, she's up there too.
Very much so.
Cameron Diaz when she showed up in The Mask. Throwback to our recent iconic moments in movie history podcast, because she was mentioned because we mentioned The Mask. And how do you mention The Mask without mentioning Cameron Diaz when she still had meat on her bones?
Oh.
When she was still juicy and delicious. Like a steak. like a porterhouse.
I'm not even going.
Like a fucking porterhouse that you're supposed to split, but you're going to eat that whole thing yourself. You know that. Like, yeah, we have the porterhouse for two. Yeah, we'll take two of those. Like, there's two of you here. Yeah. What, did I fucking stutter? I'm watching Cameron Diaz over here in The Mask. Oh, jeez. All right. Well, I think we're clearly done talking about Weird Science.
Yes. I think we are.
It was quite the adventure. Quite the adventure. It was the adventure when it came out. It's an adventure now to watch it. If this is your first time watching Weird Science, we hope you enjoyed it. We hope we helped enhance your experience.
If you didn't enjoy it, well, I hope you got at least a couple of laughs out of it anyway.
Because, listen, guys, there was a time where this was it. For a week in history, this was the movie. Every movie gets a week. The week that it premieres. So, come stroll down memory lane with us as we talk about films like this in the future. This is part of our back-to-school series, because school, being nerds, it's like the social pressures of, you know, that time.
This is definitely one of those movies where you could very well catch it at, like, 2 a.m. on cable and be in the middle of it and be wondering, what am I watching?
And the only people who know are people like us. So you got to be able to download a podcast and listen to us, like, guide you through it. Thank you for turning to us in your time of need instead of a loaded gun and some scotch. So that's how this works, and we're happy to be providing that service for you. Why don't you give me some scotch and a handgun? I'm getting out of here. Departed was on last night. It was awesome. Anyway, until next time, I think we're coming back for a stint with the Breakfast Club to round out our back-to-school theme here.
To finish our back-to-school trilogy.
Yeah, so for everyone keeping score at home, that's Real Genius, Weird Science.
It's Breakfast Club.
Yeah, we kind of dabbled a little bit into the Brat Pack here. Two out of three.
But definitely going into the what I feel is the most cynical of the that series of movies.
Yeah, well, it's like I think we kind of had to not give it all to John Hughes. You know what I mean? Because there were other movies. Like Real Genius was around this time, so
very much so.
It was just because it was college. Hughes kind of owned high school, so other people were like, "Well, I'm going to do college." You know, that's how this is going to work. So join us, will you, when we come back for John Hughes's The Breakfast Club, everybody's favorite. Until then, it's been a pleasure and an honor being Dave Clone.
And Gum is not Adams.
And just remember, when you're flipping around, if you're afraid to ask, we'll ask for you.
What am I watching?
You've been listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. Follow us on Twitter at Hollow9Cast. That's Hollow, the number 9, I-N-E, cast. Email us at Hollow9Podcast@gmail.com. Or find us at our home site, Hollow9.podomatic.com. Be sure to check out our affiliate, FangirlZone.com. Find us on Facebook. Rate and review us on iTunes. Join in the fun. Hollow 9.